Hello and welcome to another episode of Second Z's Cubed, brought to you by Alma Pictures and Baker Street Media. This podcast explores cultures from around the world and celebrates performing arts and inspires the next generation of creatives. Join us as we travel to our next destination. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Second Z's. This time, it's myself, Allison, joined by Aya, Khali, and our new host, Jessica G. And you can look her up, Jessica Galetta, anywhere you want on social media, and she will introduce herself to you all very soon. And Johnny right now will be on a bit of hiatus due to shooting and other things, and he may join us from time to time. He sends his regards to all the listeners. And he will be back when he can, if he has the time and energy. Poor thing has been going through a lot. So we beg you to excuse his absence. And thank you all for joining us for this next episode. We are super excited to start our critique of Shogun. And of course, that is coming to you by various streaming platforms and has been produced by FX. And the episode that we are going to be talking about has been directed by the one and only Jonathan Van Tulleken. So without further ado, I'll let Jessica introduce herself to you all, and then we will get right into it. So go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jessica Galetta, and I am an actress and a writer currently living in Philadelphia, which is very close to New York. Goals to actually be in New York, but I am currently New York adjacent, close enough, I guess, for now. And I'm like so excited. I'm a nerd and I love talking about pop culture and talking about literature and TV stuff. So I'm really, this is gonna be fun because I also am a huge K-pop stan, and Shogun is Japanese, so they're not the same thing, but my head has been for the past, since I listened to like a ton of K-pop, I have some familiarity or exposure to like Eastern or like the Asian collectivist side, which is a really fun, it's a good refresher and a different perspective from the Western hegemony that I have been socialized in.
Nice. Yes. So thank you. Thank you for your intro. And I'll just have to recommend you all to Jessica because she is brilliant and she is working on a book which may come out and we may be able to actually publish some cool excerpts for you guys sometime. But anyway, we look forward to having her with us. And of course, Aya with us as usual from Pantry Studios. She has come back to be on with us today. So without further ado, let's get right into it. The format for how we're going to be discussing, dear audience, is going to be full of spoilers. So if you did not see the episodes, please stop listening right now. Pause and come back later if you have time. We will be talking about, as we did with Rings of Power, technical elements, story, things we liked, things we didn't like, things that could be better. We'll also have a lot of appreciation for the casting crew as usual, and we'll try to give a balanced critique to what we see. This particular piece is super interesting because it explores a lot of really challenging topics. And for you, everyone's info, we're not going to be really discussing too much in terms of like religion side or politics. We're mostly going to be focusing on what's going on culturally back then too, in addition to the story as it unfolds and different characters' experiences, which I think it's more is very, very useful to us as we look at story and look at how these people navigated these challenging situations. So that's the little intro for all of you. And I hope that you enjoy our journey through this one. We also, as I said before, are going to also be talking about Gentlemen in Moscow, as we mentioned, which is also coming out. So there will be some times where we'll be doing tandem episodes where we're talking about elements from one thing and also talking about another piece. So Just everyone, we're doing a little hiatus from our normal presenting of different cultures going around the world as far as countries go. We're taking a pause for our series break. So that's the story for everyone, and hope you enjoy. So let's get started. I want to start with Aya, if you could share some of your thoughts first, because you're used to how this works. And then Jess can go, and then I'll go. And then we can kind of take it apart a little bit based on our show notes. So go ahead.
Okay. First off, I just want to say that this show kind of took me back to a different style of American television, even though this is very much a Japanese show, but, you know, just talking about purely from like an American studio standpoint type of deal. Someone had commented before that this doesn't feel like a show that was made for streaming, and I agree, and I feel like it shows throughout the episode. I was immediately gripped from the opening scene, and I think in the last episode, we talked about the lighting and how well done it was in the trailer. We hadn't watched the first episode yet, but we did talk about the lighting in the trailer. And why I mention lighting now is because that was part of the reason why I felt like the opening shots were so gripping. I feel like the lighting had a part to do with that, of course, with incredible set design, the ship, like just how eerie it was cutting through the water. But I like one image that still seared into my mind, even though it's like a pretty innocuous image, is when throughout like the ship creaking and moving, you see these lamps swaying from the top, right? And it created such an interesting push and pull from light to shadow. And I was like I said, just a simple image, but I was just completely taken in. And then I noticed that throughout the majority of the first episode, we either had like a misty environment or the scenes took place at night. We don't really have too many bright scenes with lots of sunshine, except I feel like one scene, which was a standout scene to me. And that was when Laura Toranaga was out in a field with the hunting falcon. And he had that amazing line, right? And
yeah,
that line kind of also mirrors the closing monologue that was done by Rodriguez in regards to the belief in Japan that people possess three hearts. And he said, I remember, I love the quote so much that I like wrote it down. And he was talking about how the falcon conceals herself against the sun, conserving energy, waiting for her moment. So, of course, that scene plays an important thematic role, in my opinion. But also, it's just a beautiful, beautiful shot. You're in this open field. You see all the beautiful greenery, and it's like the last bit of sunshine we see before he's basically imprisoned in Osaka, right? So, you know, just in terms of lighting, those were some of my thoughts on the first episode. And then as far as the characters, there are a lot. It's a big cast, and you know, it was a little difficult to keep straight all the names. I'm sure it's going to take me maybe like a little hot minute to get all the names right. But I wanted to talk about Lord Yabushige, who's played by Tadanobu Asano. And he was the lord of the fishing village. And his entrance to the village is also in the trailer. And I think that was a really smart decision because, like, from the start, I got so creeped out by him. I felt like the actor did such a great job. I, like, had goosebumps going up and down my arms because of how creeped out I was. I'm like, this man just, but he did it so well, right? Like, even though I found him repulsive, but it was also very gripping. And he comes in with this big beaming face, but you can just see just the sort of darkness lurking underneath. So just the characters in general were really well written. I thought it was so interesting how the writers wrote the entire script in English, right? And then they sent it off for the Japanese parts to be translated into Japanese. And I was so confused for a hot minute because, like, they kept on talking about translators and, you know, speaking Portuguese and, you know, the Blackthorn being on a Dutch ship, and all I could hear was English, English, English. And yeah, even though we're hearing English, it's meant to be like spoken in Portuguese when he's talking with
the Yeah, Jesuits. Originally read the book in Portuguese.
Wow. I actually at that part, I noted that too. I was like, they're like, come speak in Portuguese, and then they started speaking English. I was like, okay. So it's like a little bit of suspension of disbelief, and it didn't, like, it wasn't that jarring. It was just something I noticed too.
I was like, oh, we're not going to have Portuguese.
It took me a lot longer to get that. I was like, where's the Portuguese? But yeah, then I understood what they were going for.
I think they actually, the part that I noticed, I think they actually intentionally made it obvious, or not obvious, but you would figure it out eventually, but they also made it clear. So that scene where they had the translator guy, here, you speak Portuguese, and then he speaks in English. So they're just like, this is what we're doing, without saying, yeah, this is what we're doing.
I was not happy with that. But anyway.
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Another great actor, of course, was Sanada, who plays like the seemingly main character of the series. And I read this interesting quote from him about how he said, I needed things, including, if you don't hire Japanese actors for a Japanese role, I cannot be involved in this project, which I thought was a really principled stand from him, because there's this, yeah, there's unfortunately been this trend of people are like, oh, we're just going to hire actors from this general continent, and because they're all the same, right?
Which is
not true at all. And then I made this joke, like, in my head, of course. I'm like, oh, dang it, Scarlett Johansson foiled by him.
Yeah. The thing with, like, it's interesting, Asian people, and if people from Asian countries in Hollywood, it is kind of like, well, it's harder for them to even get roles because of racism. And I do feel like when Asian actors are successful, I make a joke in my head that it's like Hollywood allots one Asian per generation to be like the successful Asian actor. Like Michelle Yeoh is in basically everything.
Well, listen, and she also played,
I love her. She's
everything.
Been like every nationality of that continent, and I
That's
love her. She's iconic. But she is actually from Jaipur.
Malaysia.
Yeah. I was like, what country? I like blanked.
She's Malaysian. Yeah. But she also can speak Mandarin very well.
Yeah. She's amazing. And I mean, getting any Asian person in an Asian role is for Hollywood, like, a big step. Which is sad. The bar is in hell. Obviously, I don't have the depth to speak about that because I'm not Asian, but that is something I've noticed and have read about.
Yeah. I've definitely been keeping up. I think I was first aware of it when the last Geisha came out. There was a bit of blowback about that because they had actors who were not Japanese in that movie. So that was the first time I was aware of
this. Really? Hollywood that practice. Was your first time?
Michelle Yeoh was actually in that one.
Of course she was.
No. Yeah, she was good. And was the young woman who played the other female lead, was she Japanese? I don't know.
I need to look it up. I
didn't watch that thing,
so.
But
Yeah, I think there were also things about, I saw the movie and read the book when it came out because I am a nerd, and I was like, cool, let me do that. Let me like read this book and watch this movie. And because I knew the movie was from a book, I had to read the book. like I was in middle school or high school when it came out, or like early high school when it came out. I do, looking back on it now in retrospect, I do think that there are some issues with that film that probably didn't age well. I can't say for certain because I did not prepare that for this podcast because I watched Shogun for this.
You prepared other things. We can
we kind of want to try it, but another conversation. Yeah.
That could definitely be a great conversation. Like even The Last Samurai, I think The Last Samurai came like within like 2 or 3 years of The Last Geisha. And that definitely had criticisms as well.
Oh, absolutely. Though it actually didn't do too bad in Japan, if I remember correctly. So at least they didn't completely butcher it, but it was pretty awful. Yes.
Yeah, I think a problem with that, the critique was the white saviorism.
Oh, of course, that was really
whenever there's people of color in an American movie or black people and their struggles and their actual history, they have to insert a white person to lead the way and save them.
Yeah.
Thank God Shogun didn't do this.
Sanada was in that movie too.
Wait, what?
Oh, I said, funnily enough, Sanada was in The Last Samurai as well. Completely forgot about that until I was like looking up his little IMDb. I'm like, wait, how did I forget that?
Yeah, so there are some people that are very heavy hitters in this film as far as experience, and like they couldn't get people like Ken Watanabe to be in there for sure. They could never get him to be in this because this is not his kind of thing. It's like too low class for him, actually.
Yeah.
Oh no. But they were able to get some great people like Sanada, like Anna Sawai. She's great. Like she is fantastic as an actress, and of course Sadanobu Asano is amazing, and Yuki Kedoin and Yushin Lee and Hiromatsu Ida, like they're all, you know, they all have so much class as actors, and some of them haven't been known like as far as outside of Japan. So like Hira is like really good and has been really good forever and ever, but nobody knew about him until this. So it's kind of cool that there's people that are being brought out to the audiences outside of the mainland, you know? Like, I think that's something admirable, to be honest. So, I think this is a different tea.
There's so much to talk about, right, with this show.
Yes. So much. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like, I honestly, I feel like my mind is racing everywhere because, like, do we talk about, like, the costumes, the props, the set design, all the consultants that were brought on? Yeah, I just, like, I want to do it all in the same time.
We'll just go step by step. Let's go step by step. Yeah. But first, let's hear the impressions from Jess, the first impressions. Tell us about what you're thinking.
Okay, so first of all, I loved it. And I think it has really great potential. And I hope the series goes on for a while because I just think it's like that kind of epic level. I was really struck by the staging, like the blocking of the actors. It felt very much like I think it's getting really popular now that a lot of film, they get a lot of theater actors or actors with theater training, and a lot of the films, they film it like a play.
There was
one part, I think in the very beginning when the Japanese soldiers like first went on their ship And there was like this moment he like held something and then the camera panned away and he's like posed. It felt a little like very posed. And I was like, it kind of broke the fourth wall for a second. But I liked it. So I was like, ooh. But it was really interesting. That was something that was like a little like they didn't blend very well. And I'm sorry, I'm not getting more specific, but he like he held something in his hand.
The fan, and then, right?
Yeah. It was a cannonball. And then the camera panned out from him. And then but like the way he picked it up and like held it and like turned, it was very intentional, like very like theatrical, like very choreographed. And it's not a bad thing. I think I feel like maybe I notice that because I'm an actor, but and I also like it because I'm an actor, but I think it's definitely one of those things that like took you out of like the movie of the story for a second, because it's like, oh, I'm watching a play. But that's not always a bad thing. It's just something I noticed. Going on with the staging, I really loved, especially in the scenes where they're in the like all the Japanese leaders in all of their houses that are like these very traditional Japanese houses, and just like the rooms and the way that they all are positioned in the rooms, it's very intentional and very choreographed and very like, because I do in historically like people in power, like royal families and stuff, it was very much a theater. Like there was very much a presentation.
Yes.
And politics is theater. So I really like how this show is kind of emphasizing that. And especially the way they're standing and the way they move through the room. And some of it is part of like the theatrical staging of the show. Like, They're doing that on purpose to tell the story.
Movement coaches and stuff too from Japan. To show them about how to do things.
Yeah, and another thing with that is and I think some of the actresses playing like the elites, like highborn Japanese women, you could see like the way they were walking. They did that, and it looked like they were floating. And that I should probably look up what that's called. But I thought that I noted that, and I thought that was very interesting.
You
can float
when you walk around the room now.
Yeah, I'll just have to take really tiny steps. And wear really long skirts so no one can see my feet. And I love that because those scenes contrasted very sharply in a lot of elements with the scenes where it's just the men and just the soldiers. And when you see the Westerners, like, there's the brutality, and the scenes where it was the Japanese elites was very clean and very beautiful and colorful. And the scenes with the Westerners and like on the ships in the ports was very brutal and very grimy and very dirty. And I think that's very interesting because that also historically accurately reflects how how Westerners were not super hygienic.
Depends in that on time, who you but are. Like,
yeah, but other cultures were. And I also. You can add to that.
Oh no, I was just going to ask you, what did you think of the staging of the scene where during the council meeting?
I thought I really liked that too. I think I hadn't quite grasped what was happening yet. So I was still kind of like in a haze because I didn't know the story, but it was very much like an intimate conversation, but they were very much on display. Like there was a whole, like all the people were sitting around them, like an audience. And I like that, the fact that like politics is theater, like it was almost like they were watching actors do a scene. And I mean, they were actors doing a scene, but I mean, in the context of the story, it's like they were having this intense conversation. And the way, I mean, it started with like the close up. Most of the scene was the close up of the two actors talking back and forth. And I think there was a third one. They were all talking. And it was a very like inner circle, intimate not in, like intimate as in like closeness, emotional closeness, conversation between these people. And it was almost like they were in there in like a room where no one was in the room, but people were very clearly in the room, and they were, it was very clearly presented to the people in the room, and they were witnessing the event. And I just had this thought, because now we have social media and we have the ability to film things and take photographs. I think in 1500, they didn't have that. So that was the way to bear witness to major historical big events, big important events, was like having outer circle people around and positioned. They're not actively participating, but they are there to bear witness to what is happening. So that, I just had that thought, and I think that's cool.
Also mention one thing. I'll just as far as Japanese culture goes, they like to make decisions collectively, and they like to make decisions as a group. People don't like to do, and when someone talks, they're always representing others, like especially in those rooms. So a lot of times they'll be representing other people in the room, like in the room or out of people, out of the room, and many, many people as well. So like for that one to come and step into the room and break the fourth wall, right? And that was like a serious issue. So it's like a big, big deal, because you do not show your true feelings in that kind of space, and you certainly don't interrupt proceedings. It's like very big, it's like a really huge honor shame culture, even more than here, even more than other East Asian countries. It's very honor, like the, probably one of the more honor shame countries that I have ever have experienced. And it's very much like you want to make sure that the honor in the face of everyone is maintained at all costs. So it's just so crazy that they have that. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. And on that note, because that's another thing I wanted to bring up, I think knowing about that, even a little bit, even having a rudimentary knowledge of the Eastern perspective of keeping face and honor and their collectivist society, really adds layers to the story that you only see if you know about that. So that added a lot of dramatic tensions. Yes, it's like, because I feel like if I didn't know, if a Westerner who doesn't know about any of that would see this and see some of these plot points, like what the heck?
Why are they doing that? Yeah.
It would seem like ridiculous. They'd be like, what is going on in the writer's room? What? But I think especially with the guy that part is like hanging in my head. I think this is my Westerner socializing and my individualistic self, like really conflicting with this culture that I'm engaging with, because big spoiler, immediately after he was like, he declared that he would end his own life and end his bloodline, which led to the next scenes of infanticide. For me, from my Western perspective, and I think I'm just this is how I processed it. I was like, this baby, this kid had like not, I mean, it's just the fact that sometimes they had like people like being executed as like stand-ins for another person. And like Allison was saying that you spoke for other people. And it's just sometimes it was, and that baffled me. So that one, that's been sitting with me since I watched it.
I literally had a very powerful statement watching that first episode.
You had to what?
I had to take several breaks watching that first episode. Like just there were so many scenes where I'm like, I cannot handle it anymore. I need to like take a pause and breathe and regroup and come back, because like, especially the baby thing hit me so hard.
Right.
The scene with his mom with Fuji when they're trying to take him away, and then Mariko comes and, you know, basically shames the men. And I was just like, I can't. There were several scenes like that where I had to just take a step back, but this is definitely not something that I can binge.
Yeah, and I just think because the child is such an innocent.
Process it. It's not like a show that is meant to be like savored. Like if you're drinking tea, you can't just like chug the tea down. Like if it's hot, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, iced tea you can certainly chug.
This is not iced tea. This is hot tea. This is hot tea. People with milk.
And then to further that note, I actually, something that struck me. So I said to Allison while I was watching it, I was like, wow, they go straight for the jugular. I really think, and it's really a great study of Japanese culture. In that time, like historically, but also just understanding Japanese culture as a whole, even in modern times, I think it really helped. It's a really great study for that. Okay, it's a great study of that, but I thought it was very fascinating that in the first episode they're showing some of the beauty of that culture and interactions, and there's probably going to be more of that down the road, especially when they contrasted like the female characters with the masculinity. But they really showed like the harshest parts of the culture, so it was like beautiful, but also like the most difficult parts to engage with. And they sent us there like right on the jump. They weren't like, oh, we'll like give you baby steps and then like now that you're here, we're gonna like remove the veil and like this is what's really going on. No, they jumped us right in. They did not put training wheels on us, the audience, at all. So it really shows it was very poetic. There was poetry to it, but it was also very visceral and intense. It's definitely a lot to engage with. That was something that struck me too, and I think it's very powerful, like showing the beauty of a culture, or like I'm sure they're going to show more softer sides, but really just jumping in with like the harshest tones of that culture.
Yeah. I think it's also reflected in Blackthorn's journey throughout the episode, right? Mm. He starts off as this sort of hopeful, optimistic, ingenue type person in the beginning, where he's trying to convince the captain of the ship, I found white sand, you know, our rescue is around the corner, that type of thing. And then he kind of journeys to being a leader in some sense with all this bravado, and he has this like sense of responsibility for the crew of the ship. And then from there he becomes like sort of a crass, overconfident, you know, typical Westerner as viewed by like current lens, right? And then from there you see him become humbled, right? In that scene on the cliffside where what's his name, the creepy lord that I was talking about before, where he's trying to rescue Rodriguez.
Lord Yoshida.
Yoshida.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that scene.
Yeah,
it was almost funny.
I couldn't breathe, but yeah, it was like an interesting character journey that occurred in just one episode. And then the episode concludes, or not concludes, but his arc in the episode concludes with him bowing in an act of submission, which is like so different from the beginning of the episode. I felt like his character arc was so interesting and just very fast paced in that one episode.
Yeah. And I think part of it, like the Westerner, like showing the typical Westerner. First, I like that the show, what I noticed is that it decenters the Western perspective. Like, he's very much the foreigner, which is great to see that.
Welcome to my life.
in a story that's like a Japanese story or an Eastern Asian story, because usually when in Hollywood we see those cultures and those stories, but like through like the lens of like the white person or the Westerner, like as the Trojan horse and like bringing us in. But this very much decenters his perspective. I mean, his perspective is there. And you see him going from not knowing anything. He's just there for money. He's there to profit. He's like, I'm here to get my bag. And exactly. He knows nothing about the culture. So has no idea what's going on. And he also doesn't even know the language. And he very quickly, you can see how this character is very smart, because he very quickly picks up on certain things. And that's why I think by the end, the submission is really powerful, because he's like, okay, I'm here to respect the culture now. I'm here to engage. I'm here to negotiate and navigate my way in this land that I am a foreigner in. And I think that scene on the cliff, it was powerful that he challenged that lord was that I think it really showed that he figured out, he understood the shame, honor culture. And he's like, and he decided, he leveraged it for his own survival. And is almost funny, because then the way he looked, and he was standing out, and the guy's like, the Lord was like, all of a sudden, because he has no power. And then the Lord, it's like the power shifted. And he's like, I have to prove my honor now. Because it's like, I feel like a Westerner would have just like punched him in the face and be like, no, you go down there. But like, from that cultural perspective, he's like, okay, like this man just like emasculated me and took away my power, and I have to defend my honor now. So he goes and does it. And when the waters get treacherous, I did think it was very kind of badass, where he's like, thought he was going to die. And he's like, I'm not going to survive this. So he pulls out his sword and he's like, I'm going down with honor. So, so I was like, and then right at the moment he was about to like plunge it in, the rope came down, and that was kind of funny. He's like, it took a moment, because I think it showed their humanity, because he was like, I'm going to die. I'm not going to lose face. And then like the rope comes down. I was like, oh, I don't have to die.
You know, like when you talked about decentering that Western gaze, I felt like that came out so perfectly at the end with Rodriguez's monologue, where he was like, do you really think our world is the hilt of civilization just as they're coming into Osaka? I'm like, wow, that is one banger of a line. Rodriguez is one of my favorite characters, frankly.
In the book, he was a pig, but I'm glad they painted him differently in the TV show.
He's awesome.
And when we see the Western, the Westerners interact with each other, like the few that are there, we definitely see the ones that have been there for a while, and they've established their relationships and their ties. They have taken the time to understand the culture and then there's even some of the Japanese soldiers who are the translators, who now are kind of like that intermediary, so they know the language, and you see that relationships have been established. And I want to say, not to get into religious, like the religion, but like the political side of it, the political faction side of it. It was like the Catholics, the Portuguese Catholics had established and were very much in like trying to not be in harmony, but they were working with a foreign culture.
They were trying to get to know it so they could have a little bit of leverage, for sure.
Oh, for sure. They found a level of respect, because I think Catholicism
they also had a lot of education too that they provided.
Yeah. So to more on my point, like Catholicism, like culturally as a religion, as a cultural practice, has like a lot of ritual to it, which I think can loosely parallel to the Japanese culture, which has its own type of like ritual and like staging, and like politics is theater, thing. And then the Protestant, this bumbling Protestant, like rolls in and is like, and then he's like, I got really mad when he like stepped on the guy's cross. And then that was messed up. I was like, there's one thing. It's like, oh, you don't, you're a foreigner. You're like a fish out of water. You're a prisoner. This is bad. But that that was like, that was out of line. That was out of pocket.
Well, Blackthorne is like a little, Blackthorne is like a saint in the, in this series compared to how he is in the book. He is like,
I haven't read the book.
Don't read the book. It's a pain in the neck. It's like this big and like you're just slogging through like the author being circular for like ages and ages and ages. You just like
run. Like the Game of Thrones book, which I also haven't read. I've seen the show.
I took the cross.
Sorry to cut you off, Jess. I just like thought of that.
You took the cross more of...
Oh, the cross scene where he like rips it off of that monk as just him trying to show the Japanese that they can't trust this guy's translation and that there's like big beef between him and the Catholics. So because like the monk is just translating whatever, right? He's telling him that he's a pirate, and of course Blackthorne doesn't even know what he's saying, but he can tell right away that he's probably not going to be giving a really honest recap of what actually happened. So I took it more as him just trying to show the Lord that you can't trust this guy's translation and were like bitter rivals. Although it could just be him trying to disrespect Catholics, especially with the political climate of England in 1600. But that was just how I took it when I was watching the scene.
Like him
in general and the other Westerners just engage in a lot of foul language, which I know is indicative of them being like sailors. But like it got tiring after a while. All these like
welcome to the theater.
And also in contrast to how the Japanese soldiers and like politicians and people, aristocrats, like engaged with each other, because even when they were enemies, it was very, very, very formal and respectful.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they don't, you know, you don't see them losing face and like and cursing each other out. Not saying that they're always nice to each other. I'm sure, you know, Japanese people, I don't want to like deify them or like, they're definitely human too. And I'm sure, you know, they definitely, there are some characters, I think there's one, there are some characters there that I'm like, oh, they're not nice.
you finally realized it. Good job.
Yes. I was like, you know, I mean, there's definitely some I'm like, okay, some of these people are not going to be, they are going to be, they're not going to be like respectful, but I still like, even, I just think the difference of like being socialized in a collectivist society versus socialized in an individualistic society, I just think base level, there's still going to be like those differences in individualistic society. You're going to lash out and you're going to like defend yourself first. And that's something that I would obviously empathize with. And that's something that I understand from, because I would do that too.
Yeah.
There are probably more subtleties involved in the language. Like
I will
definitely,
I was going to talk about that.
Insults, but it's going to be like under three layers and, you know, yeah, it's not going to be like so in your face, but
never
several layers of decorum layered on top. Like the Southerner, bless your heart.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'll pray for you.
Oh, gosh. So, yeah, I'll share a few things that I've been thinking about. Some of them are related to what you guys have been saying. I really appreciate what everyone has been saying. I think there's some real... there's a lot to unpack for a Western audience. I showed the trailer to an Eastern audience to see what they would think of this. And it was really funny. They're like, they watched it and they're like, this is for the that guy that lives in his mother's basement in England and he watches video games. And they're like, this is also for people who know nothing about Japanese culture and are very interested to come from the West. And they're like, Japanese won't watch this film, this series. And I was like,
oh my gosh,
you may be onto it, you guys. And they were very honest, because I said, give me your opinion. And some of the East Asian cultures are much more like dragged with you than others. And they said it in a very nice way, but that was basically what they said. And then the one was like, yeah, they're going to do some historical stuff well, but like, I don't know if they can really do like justice to this, like to in so many words. And I was watching and thinking the same thing, actually, when I saw the trailer. And then when I watched the actual thing, I was talking to some people from Europe, and I said, guys, like, here's the big thing. Look for micro expressions, little things that they do with their lips, the eyes, like the head, just some really small things. Cause then you're going to know if that person, or like, for example, this one, your eyes just like, they won't even like when they're actually like almost shocked, they would be like this. Like if it's like they're actually shocked, they go, but like they won't go, oh my, like I like yes. This one, like just little things like contempt, like, or this small. And so you just have to watch for the micro expressions. The other thing I was thinking about with this is like, it's very hard to be an accurate translator when you are translating, especially under pressure and especially with emotion. I've had to do that. And I think the padre that's in the translator, who is actually in the book, he's a padre. He actually was very accurate as a translator in the book. Like he would do line by line, accurate, which is like, takes a very advanced translator to do that. And so I think they were trying to mirror that a little bit in the series, but they didn't quite mirror it exactly like he did in the book. I thought that was very interesting. Another thing that I think is very interesting is that like you can see that when the foreigners are interacting with another culture, they are not really thinking about respecting that culture or that point of view at all, because all they're in it is for money, right? Like you guys have been saying. But when Easterners meet Western culture, they don't know what rank someone is. So they have to show respect initially as well, because they don't know what rank you are. So they have to interact with you very respectfully, because you're not quite sure, especially if they're used to someone being of a certain rank when they're coming from a certain place as well, right? Because the rank is really important. Like even the fact that he was an Anjin is very important, because he was actually a pilot of ships. He's not just a sailor. So that brought him up on the totem pole a little bit, because he can actually navigate a boat, right? And that shows that he has an education. So that's like all of this, like even like why the others weren't taken along to Osaka. That's because they actually said, this guy has some kind of education. He seems to be a leader. Leave these other people over here. Like, whatever. Like, this guy's actually valuable as a asset or something like that, right? So they're always playing chess, like in terms of my experience with Eastern cultures, having been in one and been around others for a long time, is like this. You will always protect the family. You will always protect your honor, and you will always protect the dignity of your ancestors and your people around you that you really care about. And I think even how they show this conflict between the Blackthorn's people, even they're not even together as a unit. And they've been sailing with each other for half a year, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, hello? Because, like, or however long it's been, like, at least half a year, right? So they're not even, like, connecting to each other, like on a level of respect, right? Because again, yeah. They're privateers, which I always say is glorified pirates, which is why it was funny to me when they're like, "You're a pirate." I was like, "That's about right." He's like,
yes.
"That's a pirate."
Yeah, privateers are like legal pirates. They're
I call
like
them
pirates
glorified
with
pirates. Yes.
With
pirates
the,
with
pirates
a pirate's
with
license.
A license. Little piece of paper. They're like, yeah, we're going to just do official stuff and we're going to serve this one particular government, wink, wink.
Yeah. So then I think another thing that really stuck out to me, of course, given my personal background, is you can see when somebody is really, really authentic in their point of view, you know, where they stand as a person, and when they're being fake, and when the pressure is on, who is fake and who is not fake, right? So, like, it's hard to, for the audience to tell now, and I'm not going to spoil this for the audience because I want them to experience the people and the characters, but, like, if you pay attention to their micro-expressions and you pay attention to the little movements or the little things that they do or don't do, I should say, because in Japan, they will never disagree with you. Like one time, I know about this one person, they thought they had a business deal, right? But they made a mistake. They were very close to getting the deal. They made a mistake and they came like 5 minutes late to the like one of the meetings, right? Then the Japanese basically ghosted them. And they're like, what happened? And they're like, the deal is off. Like, goodbye. Like, and everything else up to that point was fine. But the thing was, they offended them because they didn't come at the time that they had said with two people of the equal rank, right? So, like, all these little nuances of, like, just small, like small little moments that I notice about like loyalties or like, or loss, or just like they're always having this culture of death, which is true. And until now, there's still a culture of death and it's very sad. But like, there's also little hopeful moments, like when that guy sees the ship and he's singing the Salve Regina, just like Hail Holy Queen, Mother of Mercy, and blah, blah, blah. So that's the hymn to the Blessed Virgin. And like, there's like little hope moments, like where you can tell that his actual core is a certain way, because nobody just randomly walks along singing the Salve Regina, like unless you're like actually serious about your point of view, you know? So like, I saw these like little things and you could see what people do in the face of fear, for example. Or like, even when that guy was killed, like, in such a brutal way, like they were like, he died slower than most people. So like, you could tell he was resisting death, right? Whereas as the Catholic locals would embrace the death and just accept it, right? So it's like this dichotomy is this like parallels. It's like a lot of parallels where you see two completely different worlds coming together. And like, I think that's part of the reason why the Lord Yabushige, why he was so fascinated with the death of that one, even though he is a really creepy person and really hedonist and everything. He probably wondered if they die the same way as everybody else, you know, like, and yes, he's fascinated with death. And yes, he's a creep in so many ways, but like, wouldn't you think that if someone came from a completely other planet or completely other, like you might as well come from the moon, you know what I mean? Like, he's definitely curious in spite of himself. And so like, even though he's really messed up, and a lot of characters are really like traumatized and messed up by their circumstances, all of them, I think, like the thing that was really interesting was just how each person approached it. Like, for example, Mariko, like, she's like, okay, why is Lord Torunaga calling me to his, like, am I gonna die? Like, she doesn't know, they haven't talked, like, you know, and like, why aren't you calling my husband? Like, what? Yeah. You know, She doesn't know what he's going to ask her to do. So, like, it's like all these small little moments I really appreciate. I also like the part where they're sending the pigeons back and forth all over, and like he's like, it's like, yeah, you know, you have to just go for me, okay? Like, and then the other one's like, you're gonna die. You can see it written on his face, like, he's gonna die. It's the last conversation we're having together kind of moment. It's fine. Yeah. Like, and then Tarnaga has so much courage that he's just like, listen, this is showing that I'm not afraid. And he literally shows them that he's not afraid of them by letting the foreign minister, who's like the really big, powerful guy, go down to this other like city. It's like a big deal. And so I think,
yeah.
I think that's something really just like where he says, sorry, friend, if we go to war now, four armies against one, I will lose. I must remain here, which is why you must go. And then later, like he said, but his friend said, you're a prisoner to your enemies, days from death, and you want me to look into a barbarian ship. And he says, please, please leave immediately. I wonder if you made a mistake, Kitamatsu, siding with me instead of those bureaucrats who want me dead. And he says, the thought has crossed my mind. So, like, you can tell that they're, like, really being honest because they're in the private space, right? With the, you know, how they talk about the heart. And even myself, I guess, having been abroad and living in so many different places, I think I'll end with this. I feel that I use a lot more microexpressions now than I used to. And I don't show my public face very much, like my inner self to the public face as much as before. And it's just like an adaptation, right? But you can kind of see how Blackthorn is starting to get that his tantrums don't work, right? Then he has to find another way to approach the culture. Anyway, these are just some thoughts I had initially. Yeah.
Interesting.
Those were really great points that you brought up, and it immediately like brought specific scenes in my mind, like when his general came in to the village to check on the ship.
Yeah.
And then he's talking to Lord Yabushige, and then you know, he's like, you know, like basically making these sort of pointed remarks about his loyalty. And then Lord Yabushige puts on like the fakest smile on his face. And he's like, this is all for Lord Torunaga.
To give a present.
So, yeah, I immediately thought of that scene. And then along with Mariko, like, there were so many incredible, like, micro expressions, as you put it, and like everything was in her eyes in that meeting with Lord Torunaga. And then I thought it was interesting that when Rodriguez went on that monologue about the three hearts, that she was one of the faces that the camera sort of zoomed in on throughout that whole process. You definitely get the sense that there are these like layers and multitudes to her as a person. And I just like, I was like, this is definitely a character to keep an eye out for the rest of the season.
And she even said in the one scene, I guess, I think she prayed or said something like, she indicated praying to the Catholic God. And she said, I have two hearts. So she even like, I think the three hearts was like, I think that was an intentional like through line to show that she's one of those, because I think when you are interacting with different cultures, I think like Allison said it, she's adapted and changed, and like some things that she does are differently now. It does change you, and I think there is some duality, and I think people think, a lot of people treat duality as if it's a bad thing, as if it's not a good thing. But I actually think duality, it takes a lot of strength to have to sit in that tension of more than one heart, especially when they conflict with each other, but you still hold them both at the same time. It takes a true strength of character and way of being. And I think people that live in duality are stronger people, are more interesting people, more fascinating people, but they're also harder to control. So
I think it also depends on the language, right? Because you kind of almost use a different, it's almost like you are using a different part of yourself when you're interacting in a different language as well, right? Mm-hmm. At least for me, yeah. I feel like that, I mean, I'm still myself, but I'm just able, I express things differently or I interact differently, gesture differently. Yeah, I see what you.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Every language has its like cadence or like its own kind of like, it's like different genres. Like if you think of language as poetry, like I think, especially as grammar translates, like, I think there's this funny little trend on TikTok right now. I don't know how big it is, but I've seen a few where some people were like, if English grammar used Korean grammar, and I saw one with like Farsi. And it was funny. It was comical because their sentence structure is so wildly different than English. It's like backwards. So it was like cute, like seeing that they, and then the people like acted out this scene where they're like, as if they were speaking Korean, but they were saying English words. Like, and it's just interesting because it is, it's like, you can tell it's like expressing yourself in a slightly different way. And
yeah.
Also it's like kind of poking fun of like, look at the, like the absurdity of that difference, like it's being cute, like from someone who speaks, like that person speaks both those languages, and they're kind of like poking fun at like at that difference.
This has been a production of Baker Street Media and Alma Pictures. Join us next week for more of our journey through the world of culture and art. Thanks for joining us.